Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 5th of May. Our guest this hour has written a couple interesting pieces in the National Journal in the last couple days. The first that we will be discussing is how the GOP blew it with Trump. In all likelihood, our guest writes, Republicans putting the pieces back together this winter will be reliving the events and choices of last summer and autumn as they try to answer, where did we go wrong? He comes up with seven areas that he will be talking about with us this hour. And he's written another article, Democrats plan to pound Trump before he's nominated. Well, we'll talk about how they plan to do that. Our guest this hour is S.V. Sharish. He is White House correspondent for the National Journal. He is the author of Jeb, America's Next Bush, based on his coverage of the Florida governor as Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Palm Beach Post. He's been a journalist for 30 years, was an editor on NPR's Washington Desk. He's the author of Quiet Passion, a biography of former Florida Senator Bob Graham, and five novels. And interestingly, he and his son sailed across the Atlantic into the Mediterranean to the Aegean Islands. They spent 2 years exploring Italy, Greece, Spain, Morocco, the Canary and Cape Verde Islands, the Caribbean and the Bahamas, and then they rode the Gulf Stream north around Cape Hatteras and sailed up the Chesapeake. That's worth a show in itself. But we have Donald Trump to talk about this hour, and we'll be welcoming phone calls as we ask you the question, how did it come to be that Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party? Our phone number, and I'm sure we'll have many calls this hour, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. S.V. Date is our guest this hour, and we thank you very much, Sharish, for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to hear about that trip sailing across the Atlantic, but maybe
another
day.
Oh, you only have an hour.
I know. It was a great trip, I'm sure. So you wrote these seven things, and I think that this one is really interesting. I believe it might be number seven. Primary voters, Republican leadership believed, would never support a vulgar, thrice-married New Yorker with a string of checkered business deals and bankruptcies. But if you attend any Trump rally, you write, and you talk to his supporters, they are completely uninterested in the conservative principles of less regulation and lower taxes. They want jobs, and they see an America where the government is helping blacks, Latinos, and all the other people who are changing the country.
Right, that's right. And, you know, that came home to me, especially after the first couple of debates when Jeb Bush and some of the other candidates kept talking about Donald Trump is not a conservative. I stand for conservative principles.
Right.
And then he'd go on about, oh, we cut the size of government. We had fewer jobs in Tallahassee after I was done than before we started, and so on and so forth. And you go to these rallies where Donald Trump is just an idol in these people's eyes, and they don't care about the size of government. They don't care about half of these things. What they care about is the country they grew up in. They remember a time when they were in the clear majority. They could have a good job without much of an education, and that's all changing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I suppose everyone can empathize with that, but at the same time, there are a lot of folks who are doing much better in this country than they were 30 years ago, African Americans, Latinos, and I don't know if the view that their improvement has come at the expense of the white working class is a fair one. But nonetheless, that's what Donald Trump has been able to take advantage of.
So there's a big element of race and racism that he's playing to, do you think?
I don't know how much race exactly, but certainly class. I mean,
right.
there's definitely the idea it's us against them and I'm with you. And that's what he's saying, and that's how he won the nomination, to be honest.
And so people ignore, because you start that number seven, I believe it is, that you know, he's a vulgar, thrice-married New Yorker with a string of checkered business deals and bankruptcies. People just ignore that about him? They don't care how vulgar he is?
Some of them seem to actually like it because, you know, he's not being politically correct.
Right.
And when you get down into what they mean by that, some of it goes back to, well, he says things that we're all thinking, and then you peel those layers back, and it's not necessarily nice what you find underneath there. So what they see in Trump is someone who doesn't play by the rules, who doesn't care about the rules, and he will win. And what he's told them is, if you elect me, you will win. No idea what he would actually do as president. I'm not sure that he personally has given that a whole lot of thought. But his supporters, so far, have given him a pass. In fact, they've given him the nomination of one of the major American political parties.
Yeah. Tuesday morning, your article begins, after Indiana Republicans had already been voting for hours, Ted Cruz goes off on this 8-minute rant on Donald Trump. You remind us here that he had regularly praised Trump for months.
Right, and he was the probably the worst offender in this group, right? I just think back to what would have happened had other people, other than just Jeb Bush, been going off on Trump starting last August. What if after Bush started on him, Cruz had jumped in, mm-hmm. and Walker had jumped in, and Christie had, and they'd all pounded on Trump and made it 15 against 1, or whatever the number on stage at that moment was. I guess it was a total of 10. I think we might have seen a very different dynamic emerge in those first few months. But what happened when Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and some of the others kind of said nice things about him, even on the debate stage, was that they legitimized him. And in the view of some of the voters, they said, well, huh, so I guess what he's saying must be okay. And if all of them are better than Hillary Clinton, like everyone on that stage right. said at least once, then we may as well go with the ones who sounds like us, who talks like us, who says the things that we want to say. So in a big sense, this is kind of at their doorstep. They created this mess, and now they're stuck with it.
And they never really saw it coming?
I think in January they saw it coming, and by then it was too late to undo it. I mean, when he came in second in Iowa, there was an opportunity to beat him in New Hampshire. And had he lost two straight, that would have been the end of him, because his entire identity, his entire claim to fame was winning all the time, and then he would have lost two straight, that would have been it. But that didn't happen, because in order to have beaten him in New Hampshire, they would have had to have started in November, December, with a lot of ad money in New Hampshire, try to get out a lot of independent, undeclared voters to vote against Trump, and they didn't do that. It was every man for himself, and the party did nothing. And when he won in New Hampshire, he won in South Carolina, and then he won in Nevada, and that was it. I mean, by then it was, you know, the door was open, the horse was out, it was too late. Time to regroup for 2020 at that point.
And there was a lot of anti-Trump ad money spent in Iowa, is that right?
There was, toward the end, there was a fair amount spent, but that wasn't the time to do it. The time to do it was last fall. Now, there was one outfit called Club for Growth that did spend $1 million, and they did it starting in, I want to say, the second week of September. Now, if you looked at his polling numbers during that month, you'll see that they went down steadily by almost 10 points by the end of that month. And the Club for Growth ads, that was the only thing different that was happening in that time period. And the end of that ad run, the Club for Growth said, look, see, it can be done. He can be beaten, but we're not going to do it by ourselves. We've got a lot of stuff to look at. We've got House races. We've got Senate races. We would welcome other people to jump in. Nobody jumped in. And his numbers went right back up. And then at the end, Ted Cruz made a strong run at him. He came in first in Iowa, in fact, but it wasn't enough to keep him from winning New Hampshire.
Hmm. I wonder if Trump had used that line about Cruz's father earlier on in this primary season, if Cruz would have been a different kind of candidate against Trump.
I don't know. So much, he had said so many offensive things about so many people that for Cruz to have ignored it all that time, and the way he even prefaced his remarks, I'm going to tell you now what I really think about Donald Trump. Well, then, what have you been telling us all this
exactly.
time, then? I mean, right, what was that supposed to mean?
Yeah. Now, this is interesting that whether or not that the Republicans didn't seem to know how much money Donald Trump really had, and that played into their fears about a third-party run on his part. Tell us that story.
Right. Well, that was really astounding to me when I tried to dig in a little bit and see how much they knew about this guy, because there have been books written about him. In fact, there was one by a former New York Times reporter, now a Bloomberg writer, named Timothy O'Brien, mm-hmm. who went in great detail to determine how much Trump was worth. In fact, Trump got so angry with the number that O'Brien came up with in that book that he sued him for libel, and or for maybe it wasn't libel, maybe it was some other cause of action, but in either case, the suit was dismissed, and the transcript that Trump gave in that time period was phenomenal. He talked about how he routinely exaggerated his wealth because, he said, everyone does it. Well, had they bothered to look up just a few articles, had they bothered to read that book, they would have seen they were dealing with a paper tiger. He wasn't worth anywhere near the $10 billion that he claimed. And we'll see that, you know, a big part of why they were afraid of Trump was that they thought he was going to run third party with all his billions of dollars and it would damage the Republican candidate and Hillary would win. Well, okay, so they're going to give him the nomination instead. That was their option, I guess, because that's where they are.
Well, let's talk about the amount of money that the Democrats are going to raise. And you mentioned the over $1 billion. Now the Republicans are in this weird position, aren't they, that Donald Trump isn't going to part with his. He doesn't have billions. He's not going to part with a lot of his money. And are you going to be able to have the same kind of fundraising taking place on the Republican side when you've got a lot of people who are just not real excited about his candidacy?
That's going to be the big question of this campaign, at least a big part of it early on. The Republican Party says they will be fine. There will be plenty of money from people who just don't want to see Hillary become president, and so they will. Their money won't be an issue. Money won't be the reason that Donald Trump loses. That's what they say. Now, a lot of the campaign is not these big $1 million, $5 million checks. It's the smaller donations, the maxed out $2,700 donations, and you need thousands of those in order to fund the campaign. The Democrats have been at this for a while. Hillary started raising general election money. Well, she got commitments from general election money. I don't think she's actually raised any yet. But the president, Obama, raised close to $1 billion in hard dollars last time around. The Republicans aren't anywhere near that right now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if those ads, I saw one of those ads yesterday online. The Democrats are, according to your article you wrote on May 2nd, I believe, going to pound Trump before he is nominated with ads. When are those going to start, and what will be the nature of those ads? And then we'll talk about the ads that he's likely to run.
Right. The the Trump ads are going to have to counter the Hillary, the Hillary Clinton ads. And the Democratic super PAC called Priorities USA is going to be starting out in just a few weeks with some ads they've been working on for months. And they're just going to really bring to the public what it is that Donald Trump's been about all these years. His comments about women, his comments about minorities, his business deals. A lot of the things that the anti-Trump Republicans tried to start pretty late, they're going to be bringing up very early in this general election campaign. June 8th is the date that I was given that these ads start to hit in all the, you know, the seven swing states where it's going to matter. Florida, Virginia, Colorado. If the Trump folks don't start undoing that damage, we'll see what happened to him. The same thing that happened to Mitt Romney back in 2012 when the Democrats were able to paint him and define him before Romney could kind of tell people who he was and what he was about.
Hmm. And is Trump likely to use this line of Bill Clinton's affairs with various women? Is that a good line of attack to get Hillary Clinton or not?
For people who don't like Hillary Clinton, they've not liked her for years and years, and they're not likely to start. So anything that adds to that, they'll feel better about supporting Trump, I suppose. I've talked to a guy who actually worked for Giuliani, for Mayor Giuliani of New York, when he was thinking of running for Senate back in 2000, and they tested that exact line. And Republican women actually walked out of the focus group because they were so angered that they were trying to blame Bill Clinton's problems on Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, women in general, Republican women see that it's totally unfair, and so not really sure how that would possibly help him, but that's what he says he's going to try.
Well, I was thinking yesterday about the number of people who don't even remember Bill Clinton's presidency. It wasn't yesterday, right?
It's been a while, and there's a whole generation of people who've grown up, become a voting age adult since then. And I don't know that going after Bill Clinton's extramarital affairs is going to hurt the long-suffering wife. I'm not sure how that how you get from A to B. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm sure that all the scandals from the 1990s will be dragged up again, and we'll hear all about Whitewater and Jim McDougal and, you know, the savings and loan and all the other stuff. But is that going to turn off independent voters more than what Donald Trump has been saying? That's their challenge.
What about the email? He's bringing that up already. Her emails.
Right. I think if Hillary Clinton is actually indicted by the Justice Department, then I think people will pay close attention to the emails. If not, you know, that's just a tough one to say, that these were somehow damaging national security. I mean, because at the end of the day, if you're a government official and you choose to delete personal emails from your government account, you can do that. That's legal. And so, I mean, the alternative that she could have done was to run everything to the State Department servers, yeah, and then she would have deleted all the personal and Clinton Global Initiative emails and would have been perfectly within her rights. So I've never understood exactly what would have been different, you know, other than following the letter of the rule, that is going to change a lot of people's minds. I mean, you know, Jeb Bush, when he was governor of Florida, ran all his emails through his personal server that he took with him when he left. So this is not unprecedented among politicians, big-name politicians. Mitt Romney had his servers destroyed when he left the governorship in Massachusetts. So I don't know that average voters are really going to let this, are going to turn their view on emails.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We now find ourselves in a situation where Donald Trump is probably the Republican nominee to be president of the United States. And so that requires some discussion. What do you think about that? Our guest this hour has written some very interesting pieces. Sharish Date is White House correspondent for the National Journal. And the piece that he wrote yesterday is how the GOP blew it with Trump. They find themselves in a situation now where he's not probably the guy they wanted to have at the head of the ticket, and how did that happen? And so he wrote seven reasons why that did happen. He's also written a piece within the last couple days on how Democrats plan to pound Trump before he is nominated. So what do you think? How did Donald Trump get to be the nominee of the Republican Party? What do you think about that? I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who either support him or your Republicans who are concerned about him. But how did it happen? It is a pretty remarkable thing, isn't it? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. There are other ways to reach us. You can go to talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to our Facebook page, where if you like us, we'll send you little notices about what's coming up in the future. Little notices. Always good to be in the know. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. So we'll be with you in just one moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Donald Trump, probably the nominee of the Republican Party. How did that happen? That's the question to you as well. 800-486-8655 is our number. Tony in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hey, Tony.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is basically this election is going to be more about personality than substance and policy. And that's what my concern is, because Donald Trump is going to bloviate, not really say what any policy is going to do. You know, make America great is a great tagline, but this is already a great country. And how is he going to make it greater? I mean, what he's going to do is he's going to hurt the middle class more. He's not going to tell us any policies that he's going to bring forth to help people that are underemployed, unemployed, you know, saddled with student debt. You know, social programs are not getting funded, but yet we can find money for arenas and stadiums and things like that. So I don't know how he's going to get that across, and how Hillary, her job is to keep on going to policy and showing how she's going to help the voters. I mean, that's my concern, and that's what I think is going to happen in this election.
Who are you supporting, Tony?
I support Bernie, but Hillary's going to have to take something of Bernie's platform and put it into her platform to get more support. I will vote for her if she's the nominee, I'm not definitely voting for Trump. There's no way.
Thank you, Tony, for your call. Sharish.
Right. Well, getting to the question about Donald Trump's policies, I'm not sure what policies there are that he's talked about or talks about with regularity other than building a wall and somehow getting Mexico to pay for it and undoing trade deals. I've always wondered about what trade deals, because there are no trade deals with China. I mean, China is a member of the World Trade Organization, and it has most favored nation trading status, as does every other country. So I've always wondered what that meant exactly. Now, regarding other policies, well, for example, during the first or second debate, he said that wages were too high and that people who wanted to get more money needed to work harder in order to get up into the stratosphere, as he said, and do better for themselves. And then just yesterday he said, well, he'd raise the minimum wage because people needed enough to live on. So I have no idea what his policies are going to be. But I'm not sure that's what the election's going to turn on. The election has turned on since 2004. It was the same in 2008 and 2012. It turns on turnout. How many of your people who support you can you get out to the polls? And right there, the Democrats have had an advantage for the last two elections, and the states have been in their... The map is favorable to them. I mean, Hillary kind of starts out with close to 240 electoral votes. She only needs 30 more. So... not sure whether people are going to be paying real close attention to what he says he's going to do versus what she says she's going to do.
Tony mentioned personality. It's striking to me that maybe I'm just looking at this through different eyes, but it strikes me as though neither one of them have really sparkling personalities. I keep waiting for somebody to feed them some jokes, you know, they lighten it up. I never see Donald Trump smile very much, and she doesn't very much either. It would be so much more entertaining if they had some jokes, don't you think?
Well, I would agree with you about her. I will say that Donald Trump's rallies are very entertaining. In fact, that's why some people go to them, specifically for the entertainment. I've been
really?
To places.
How are they entertaining?
Absolutely.
How?
Well, because he, you know, in the way that people go to or went to Don Rickles' comedy shows, he insults people and, you know, it's all fun,
yeah,
and then you go home. And there were actually people I've met who went out of their way to drive an hour to see him and hear him. They may have seen him on The Apprentice, and he says he's so famous and rich, and here he is now insulting, you know, Jeb Bush and insulting Marco Rubio, whatever. So those were fun. They were could be funny. People enjoyed him just for the world wrestling kind of feel of the whole thing. And maybe that matters. Maybe today an actual entertainer is all you need to be elected to the presidency. I don't think that's how it works, but yeah, I've been proven wrong already this election cycle, so maybe I'm not the best person to listen to.
Tony, well, you're fine for us. Tony, thanks very much for the call. Chad in South Range, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Chad.
See, I'd just like to bring up something that I've heard is... you know, almost another class of Trump supporters being the uneducated white working class. You know, I guess that's one part, you know, the constituents of people I talk to, you know, we're tired of seeing the same old policies rolling through, but yet we're getting up every morning, going to work, our 8 to 12 hour jobs, and we're paying for the stuff that, you know, in a grocery store you see somebody with an EBT card talking on a cell phone, and it's stuff that we have to pay for all the time. And with these social policies that do keep coming through, you know, I guess we're looking for a change more than anything.
What kind of change are you looking for, Chad? What do you want?
I guess we can't keep going down the same the road of, you know, free college. My son graduated last year. He paid for his way through tech school in the welding program. You know, does he get a check from the government next year saying, well, here, we'll reimburse you for your schooling? I mean, I guess I'm hoping to teach him that you have to get out and you have to work and you have to earn what you do. I mean, I go to work odd shifts, weekends, to support the lifestyle that I'm comfortable in, and I don't expect somebody to give me it.
Yeah,
and I think we're losing a lot of that in our country.
Yeah, and who do you think's being given things?
The lower class, you know, I guess I don't know where to stand on the minimum wage, but exactly. The minimum wage was never meant to support families or households, and there are jobs out there. You know, listen to the labor reports. There's jobs unfilled, but I guess you see too much of it, and you hear about more of it coming, and who's going to pay for it?
All right, thanks, Chad, for your call. Sharish.
Right. Well, I'm not sure what Donald Trump would do about any of those things because he hasn't really spoken to that. He's actually, if you go to his website and try to understand his economic program, there's a big tax cut in there that would run up the national debt by, I think it's like $10 trillion over the next decade. And it's... Maybe that's hard number to put on because it's difficult to understand exactly how it would work. But in terms of dealing with food stamps or with any other safety net thing, he hasn't really addressed that at all. And you know, having been an editor covering Congress once and gone through a series about food stamp recipients, I mean, it does irk people when they see folks paying for groceries, you know, with the EBT card. But I would challenge them to get through a month buying food for even two people with the amount of money that is available to them. So I don't know if that's something to... I'm not sure that I would want to trade places ever with someone on who's receiving those benefits. Now, getting to what Trump would do, what Hillary Clinton would do on colleges, I know Bernie Sanders has talked about making all of public four-year colleges free. The plan that he's put forward doesn't really address how that would work with some specificity because the federal government doesn't pay for four-year colleges. And so how would you even make that happen? Donald Trump, I don't think, has addressed college affordability at all, so I'm not sure what to say about that.
Thanks, Chad. Let's go to Josh next. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's talk about Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump's going to unite the GOP, he's going to unite the Democrats, and he's going to unite the independents. And his political policies are going to work. You know, you're not talking about his tax proposal. It's not going to create a $10 trillion deficit. His tax proposal is revenue neutral. And he's going to balance the budget, create jobs. He's also going to put a tariff tax on jobs staying overseas. And he's going to respect every people in the community. In his bathroom comment, we talked about, leave it alone. He doesn't want to put a transgender bathroom at this place. Now, let's think about Hillary Clinton's proposal. Three taxes, going to hurt jobs, and Bernie Sanders. I just looked at the National Republican Congressional Committee today. That Bernie Sanders' single-payer tax system is going to cost over $13 trillion over the next decade. These are estimates. And that does raise taxes on everybody, including businesses. And that makes me scared. I am a Donald Trump supporter. I think he's going to make America safe again. He's going to keep these so-called criminals not in the United States. He's going to reopen Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. That's what Clinton wanted to support, is to close Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So let's say about Donald Trump.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sharish.
Well, where to begin? The Trump tax plan, I mean, I urge you to read it, not just listen to what Donald Trump says about it, because it's really mystifies, well, it doesn't really address the things that he claimed he would do with it, and it decidedly would add a lot of money to the debt, unless you, at the same time, dramatically increase economic growth, and there's no reason to believe that growth would increase by the percentage that it would have to in order to make up for that, for the loss in revenue. Regarding international policy, if you were to impose 35% to 45% tariffs on goods coming in from Mexico or China or other places, just think about what the average person spends on a trip to Walmart. If the average person is spending $100 for stuff from Walmart, make that $145. And let's see how people like that, because that's what the cost of his policies would do there. Plain and simple, there's no way around it. I mean, if you get into a trade war with one of your major trading partners, that's the price you pay. So, I don't want to put too much emphasis on what he's proposed, because there's what he's proposed is in there's so little detail given that it's hard to say exactly what would happen. But in broad strokes, that's what he's talked about, is essentially imposing a giant tariff on imported goods.
I think it is true that really nobody, the Democrats really didn't see this coming with Bernie Sanders either. His rise has been phenomenal in the Democratic Party. A Democratic socialist senator, for heaven's sake, from Vermont, who's taken on the Clintons, and he's not going to get the nomination probably, but he's done very, very well. Donald Trump, who's addressing people who are calling into our show today, that people are missing what has happened in this country, and a lot of people are missing it. The press is missing it. Washington is missing it. That people are hurting. People are working really hard. They're getting up and working extra hours, and they're not making as much money, and their houses lost value, and it's just been hard for years now. And both parties have been kind of missing that. They've been missing that, except perhaps for certainly Bernie Sanders, who's moved the party to the left, and Donald Trump. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. No, that there is some value to that. I mean, there's certainly the parties have been listening to the people who fund the elections, and by and large, those people have done much better since the financial crisis. I mean, where the incomes have gone up have been among those people at the very top. That is absolutely true. On the other hand, things are better today than they have been in most of history. I think that's forgotten sometimes, that people are paying less in real terms as a real percentage of their total income than they probably have been able to do ever. I mean, food is cheaper in terms of real dollars than it has been. You can now have an full computer in your phone, in your pocket, that pretty much everyone can afford. So, yeah, incomes have not gone up as much as they had been going up during the 70s. But remember, their inflation was strong in the 70s, too. And so I just haven't bought into the gloom and doom that we've seen on both sides of the aisle on this. I mean, it's very easy to trash what's happened and say it could have been better. That's true. But it also could have been a lot worse. I mean, think of where things were at the end of the financial crisis and think of where things are now. So, yeah, the parties have missed this kind of this foment among a lot of their supporters. But I will say this. Having gone to a lot of Bernie Sanders rallies, I didn't meet very many people who said, in the end, if Bernie doesn't get it, I'm not going to vote at all. Or who said, in the end, if Bernie doesn't get it, I'm going to vote for the Republican. So, no, Hillary Clinton did not see this coming. At the same time, I don't know that it's hurt her as much, I think, as some folks are reading into it.
But don't you think, when you look at the huge numbers of young people, I mean, we're talking 72%, 82%, he's winning primaries and caucuses among those 18 to 30, that those people are hurting in this country. Those are college-educated, a lot of them, who are working several jobs, who aren't making enough money, who have huge student debt. That population is very liberal.
That's right, and which is why I think that in the end the Democrats are going to say that, you know, either they won't vote or they'll vote for us. And they're probably right, given how unpopular Donald Trump is right now with young people. I mean, I think his disapproval numbers are, you know, 70 or sometimes 80%. As to student debt, I think there are some policies already in place that allow you to amortize that, and so that you only have to pay a certain percentage of it over time, based on what your income is. And it's true, there are not the number of jobs that people with 4-year degrees would like in fields that allow for career advancement. That's certainly true. How much that has to do with the way the recovery has happened, and how much that has to do with just the way the world economy is working now. I mean, it takes fewer people to make the stuff that we all use. So that's the fundamental question, I think, which neither candidate or neither party has really touched.
A Facebook comment from Tina: with Donald Trump as the nominee, do you see any changes in the makeup of Congress? Will the Democrats gain some seats?
Well, right now, the Republicans in the House are very worried that what they thought was going to be, they thought they were going to be immune from whatever happened to the Senate. Now they're starting to worry, too. I saw a quote from a Texas congressman, Louie Gohmert, who said, you know, I didn't start worrying about Donald Trump until recently when I thought that it might start affecting my reelection. Mm-hmm. Right now, the idea is that they could lose anywhere between 5 and 15 seats in the House, not enough to flip it. The Senate was going to be a tough... That was going to be a tough challenge for the Senate Republicans no matter what happened, because just the nature of the seats they have and the states they're in, and they will remember these, a lot of these folks were elected in that 2010 wave, and they were going to have a tough time no matter what. Donald Trump at the top of the ticket makes their job considerably tougher. I mean, right now I would have to say that the Democrats probably have at least a 50% chance of retaking the Senate, more than likely much higher than that.
Hmm. Mickey in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you, Mickey?
Good. Well, I remember a few weeks back, I don't know if it was your show or not, but there was a guest on talking about how societies, ours as well, goes through ebbs and flows and highs and lows, and right now we're going through a recession, and we're just about hopefully beyond that, or at least pretty soon, and how that was more considered a winter of it, and how we're going to be going into a spring, hopefully pretty soon. And when the spring started to happen, that people would be very worried, a core group, and they would be fighting back against change in our societies. So in order to get beyond this recession that we've had, we have to change how we do business, and how the economy is going to have to rebound is going to be a little different from what we've done in the past. And there's going to be a reaction against that. And I think that's definitely Trump and his supporters. As we just heard a couple people back, definitely the word fear came out, I'm afraid. And I think that's a lot of it, is there's a lot of fear. And so they want to go with the status quo. They don't want things to change. And we need to change in order to become better, like we've always done as American society.
Sharish.
Right. Well, you know, you address you bring up a very basic point about this, is the demographic change that's happening in this country. I mean, that's kind of irreversible, and some folks think it's a bad thing. They want to be back to a more homogeneous country where, you know, 87 or 90% of the folks were white. That's just not going to happen, and it's not really a good thing wanting that is not realistic, and as a goal, I'm not sure it's desirable. So, having said that, if your party has been appealing to a group of folks who, for the last 30, 40 years, have seen that as kind of their grievance, that's going to cause problems eventually, and this is where we are. I mean, at the end of the 2012 election, the Republican Party wrote this long report saying, we've got to change because the country is changing, and we've got to look more like the country. And the Senate passed an immigration bill to try to help with that process, and the House said, we absolutely refuse to pass it. So then comes Donald Trump, not to help bring about some of the things that the party wanted to do in 2012, after 2012, but actually reverse them. So, this as much of a surprise it is for Trump to be an actual nominee for the presidency of the United States, this is kind of an existential moment for the Republican Party. What is it that they're about? Because clearly, they're not about those things they thought they were about, which was lower taxes, less government, and more personal responsibility. None of that. They're about whatever it is Donald Trump says they're about now. And that's going to be an interesting thing to watch over the next few months.
It sure is. Our guest this hour wrote a piece for the National Journal yesterday, How the GOP Blew It with Trump. Our guest is Sharish Date. He is White House correspondent for National Journal, and we're welcoming phone calls. Our number, one line is open right now for you, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to Jerry in Waukesha next. Hi, Jerry.
Good afternoon. Thanks for allowing me to participate.
Sure.
I'd like to start with answering the question and hope to get maybe a statement in or two before you got to pass me over. I think How did this happen? You asked the question, how did this happen? Well, to me, it's pretty simple. America just can't seem to get enough of people that are celebrities, whether they're sports stars or movie stars, or in this case, Donald Trump. They made him a celebrity with goofy TV shows over the past decade or so. Doesn't matter what their behavior is, and whether they get caught committing crimes or things of that nature, just they're a celebrity, they've got money, that's all it seems to matter. And I think the Democrats really, if they're, I heard this morning that Hillary has a head-to-head 13 percentage point lead if she had to go up against Donald Trump right now, and actually Bernie's got a 16 as far as a poll was taken. If they're going to kind of coast and not really put some effort into this, they're going to have trouble because, in my opinion, conservatives are very cunning, they're very calculating, and they can get creative when something's going on. And right now they're cooking up ways how they can either get a viable third party going with somebody, or if nothing else, I was listening to a different talk show this morning. They're trying to convince their base that to go to the election, do what they have to do regarding Trump, but worry more about, you know, all the candidates on the lower part of the ticket, you know, senators and things like that. And believe me, I think if it comes down to it, whoever goes up against Trump is going to have one heck of a time in November winning.
Interesting. Thanks for your comments, Jerry. What about a third-party run? Do you see that? Do you think any Republicans are mulling that over today? Sharish?
Well, some of them are mulling it over, and if the Democrats are smart, they're encouraging them to mull it over because that would pretty much seal the deal. Mm-hmm. I remember the last time there was a third-party candidate who got a significant part of the vote, that was Ross Perot back in 1992, and he basically made sure that Bill Clinton got the White House that year because a big percentage of his vote came from George Herbert Walker Bush. And even in 2000, when there was a third-party candidate who got a relatively small percentage of the vote, that probably got George W. Bush elected when that vote came from Al Gore, thanks to Ralph Nader. So third-party candidates can make a difference. In this case, if one were to run as a pure conservative, that would pretty much guarantee that Hillary Clinton would be the next president. As to what will happen in November, you know, elections are done at the state-by-state level, and if you look at the map, right now, Florida looks like it's a place that's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's because there are so many Latinos there, and Donald Trump has managed to alienate Cuban Americans, right? Cuban Americans have been voting Republicans since the Bay of Pigs, and so that's been a long time, and if you've even lost them, there's pretty much no way that you're going to win Florida. And if that happens, that's kind of game, set, and match right there. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, things can change and opinions can move, but at this moment, if you had to bet, you'd have to say that Hillary Clinton probably has the much easier path to the White House.
Yeah. What about his comments? And I must confess that I'm kind of out of this world. I don't know if I've seen any reality television shows. There's so many other things to watch. But his comment that Americans can't get enough of celebrities, and just the fact that he was on TV for 10 years, these shows were very popular. So we want to vote for somebody for president because they happen to be on TV as a celebrity? I don't get that.
Right. Well, yeah, that brings up two questions, really. One is, it's always struck me as, you know, people complain about how much they work. But if they work so much, when do they have time to watch all this reality TV?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to puzzle that together with, and at the same time, Donald Trump played a business executive on this TV show, and he had people do just ridiculous things in order to prove their worth, and somehow this made him seem like a person with business acumen or with the decision-making abilities. I mean, that's just silly. Now, it's one thing to win primaries because turnouts in primaries are very, very low. I mean, you'll be lucky to see primaries where the normal turnout rate's 20-30%. General election is very different. General election, the majority, the vast majority of people who are registered to vote actually turn out and do vote. So I think Donald Trump may be able to pull out some victories in some states against other Republicans when all he had to do was pick up a few thousand or a few 10,000 more votes, and right away he's really up the turnout rate. That's not going to be the case in November. He's going to have to tap into a large group of people. And right now, the polling suggests... Now, interestingly, as his numbers went up within the Republican primary voting base since last June, his numbers went down among the general election voting base. So, you know, what people liked within the Republican Party has turned off people in the rest of the country.
Thanks, Jerry, for your call. Michael in Milton, hi.
Well, hey, I'll try and be real brief. Three things. One, it's like, I echoing on the last caller, it's like, you know, what's going to happen with the third-party potential candidacies. The second point is, I don't know, I'm a Bernie guy. I'm way to the left of the Democratic Party. I don't know why the Democrats would be delaying for months to start the ads. I mean, unless they think that this guy's, like, so bad they don't want to kill him so early that they're going to get somebody else. And then the third point would be, boy, the ground game. I mean, Trump has no ground game. I mean, I don't know, is he going to be able to convert the other people that he's been trashing for God knows how long?
Yeah, that's
an interesting point. To help him along? And that's it, and I'll shut up.
All right, no, well, I'm glad you called. Yeah, let's start with the ground game. He doesn't have a ground game, does he?
No, because, you know, that's something for politically correct candidates to have, and he's just going to... Yeah, that was a big question in Iowa, is does he have an actual turnout operation? And I went out there back in December and then in January and looked around, and there wasn't one. I went to Trump headquarters and kind of sat outside for an hour looking at people who went in and out, seeing if people went in, came out with yard signs, nobody. There was no activity there, and it dawned on me that there wasn't one. This is like this... all media-driven, fly-in for a rally and hope for the best kind of thing. And, you know, I go back to what President Obama did in 2012. I mean, he had an incredible turnout operation, and that's exactly what the Clinton people have mimicked and have... They've already started field staff work in Ohio and in Florida. And where are the Trump folks? Well... the Republican National Committee was supposed to start putting people on the ground in these places. They had to delay that because they didn't have a nominee yet. Had they gotten a Jeb Bush or a Scott Walker or a Chris Christie or a Marco Rubio, they probably would have had staff in a lot of places that matter by now.
Yeah.
One they have almost nobody.
One more call, one more minute, too. Gene in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. First of all, thank you very much for the show. It's my favorite one on NPR.
Thanks, Jean.
I listen to you every day.
Thanks.
I would like your guest, Glean, and yours as well, on socioeconomic difference between Trump supporters and Trump himself. There is such a difference in the class. I don't understand how... they feel that this billionaire who has never experienced anything that they have experienced, how they think that he is going to be of service and of aid to them.
Sharice.
I think the easiest way to look at this is Donald Trump, had he just put the money that he inherited from his family into the stock market, he'd be way, way richer than he is today. Okay, so he is... done lousy compared to the economy in general. He's the idea of what poor people think a rich guy ought to be. And that's kind of the key here. He talks as if he lives in Queens on the street. I don't want to say a con game because he's not tricking people out of money here, but to suggest that somehow he has... the same life as these folks, you know, that is kind of ridiculous. He doesn't. At the same time, he's also not of the business class because take a look at what's happened to his fortune over the years.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's quite a year, huh? Thank you so much, Sharice, for being with us. Appreciate your time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Sharice Date, White House correspondent for National Journal, and we thank him for doing the writing, the latest thing that he wrote was how the GOP blew it with Trump. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and Scotty Myers for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee, where the sun, she's a-shining. Stay with us. Hour number two, the streets of East Baltimore, where our guest was a drug dealer for a number of years and is now a college professor.